To live is to struggle. And we all know the struggle is real. When I first started college at Freed Hardeman University, I started with such an optimistic attitude that I'm just going to conquer everything, I'm going to accomplish everything I want to accomplish, and that I'm going to do it well. And then at the end of my freshman year, at the end of the first semester, I found myself in finals week, and I was totally wrecked by it. And in fact, instead of totally conquering everything, I was worn out. And one of my friends posted this picture on Twitter of me laying out on the floor, and he simply tweeted this, is that he's been like this for 3 hours. To live is to struggle. And so I thought I was going to totally conquer everything in school, but I ended up being totally wiped out by it. And then I thought when I would graduate, I thought life was going to be so much easier after that. Like after, you know, like college is the pinnacle of difficult living, right? Like that's a total challenge, like total challenges you're going to face in life of this busy schedule going. And it is. It's very hectic. It's got a lot going on. But what I found out is when I got out after college is things continue to speed up. Things continue to go quicker. Time moves faster. Bills get higher in the body. Move slower. Is that there's so many challenges to face once you move on from that early time in college. And we all face this reality, is that to live is to struggle. And maybe you have faced struggles. In fact, I would say you have faced struggles, that every single person in here has faced some kind of challenge, some kind of struggle. Maybe you're facing that right now. And from the 2020 pandemic, if one thing has been made clear to us, it is that to live is to struggle. Is that the pandemic showed us, no matter what your financial record is, no matter what your background is, no matter how great a job you have, no matter how great your Instagram following might be, that we all are on the same boat. Is that we all are susceptible to the struggles of this life. Because to live is to struggle. And maybe you are facing some of those challenges now. Maybe there's challenges with your job. Maybe you face struggles within your family. Maybe your marriage has been challenged at times. But the point is, whatever situation we find ourselves in, no matter how high or low we might find ourselves in life, we're all facing some kind of struggles. To live is to struggle. It's a struggle to be human, much less, right, just a follower of Jesus, is all the additional challenges that we have to face in our calling. But the struggle to be human, we see this all throughout the book of Genesis, as we've been going through story after story. It's really this chronicle, these chronicles of struggle and what it means to be human. But when you look at the beginning of Genesis and where we've been so far, you have God who created his good world with good purposes to bless the world and to bring blessedness and goodness to his good world. But then he creates humanity in his image to be his partners to bring about that goodness and blessedness. But then in the garden, humanity chooses a different path. They choose a path that seems right to them to bring blessing and to bring goodness to their lives and to humanity. That path ends up being a path that leads ultimately to death, away from God's purposes for the world and for humanity. And then from there, what we see and what we've seen so far in this series is that story after story, from Cain and Abel to the flood and the stories in between, the Tower of Babel, to even some of the stories we saw last week, is you have the story after story of the struggles of human beings. And the reason is because we choose our own way. We try to provide for ourselves. We try to take our own path in order to bring goodness and blessedness to our life. When in reality, God created us for that very purpose in partnership to him. And in Genesis 3:15, God made a promise, made a covenant, saying that I'm going to provide one, a seed of the woman, to come. And he's going to set all of this right. But as we go through the story of Genesis, we've yet to see that really be put into play. But then it began with last week as we looked at the story of Abraham. As God picks this man named Abraham, and he decides that through Abraham and his family, that he is going to bless Abraham and his family, and that it's going to be through their family that he's going to bless the rest of the world, that he's going to bring the blessedness and goodness that he originally intended for creation. He's going to bring that through the family of Abraham. And that promise was made to Abraham, and then that promise was passed on to Abraham's son, Isaac. And now that's sort of, you know, we can see through that story that that kind of ebbed and flowed, and that it was bumpy along the way. But what we see so far in Genesis, going forward from the story of Abraham, is that plan is moving forward as it's passed from Abraham to Isaac. And then we pick up in this story that we look at today, as we see that promise being passed on to Isaac, to his sons, Jacob and Esau. And Jacob and Esau, as we've already seen, they have quite the history, quite the story. They're twins, in fact, and as they're being born, they're in the story recorded in Genesis chapter 25, Esau's coming out of the womb, and Jacob is pictured as the twin behind him grabbing his heel as he's coming out of the womb, which would be symbolic. Because what we find out is the name Jacob means supplanter. It's grasping what is not yours and using deception in order to get ahead. And that's exactly the very thing we see with Jacob and Esau. As was read in the story there, with where Jacob ends up bargaining when Esau's basically apparently on his deathbed, and Jacob leverages soup and food in order to take Esau's birthright there in Genesis chapter 25. And so that's kind of strike one of their conflict, of Jacob trying to supplant, trying to deceive, trying to take what is not his. And so he takes Esau's birthright, which we might assume is the inheritance, what he would receive as his portion of the inheritance, the greater portion. But then you have another story there in Genesis chapter 27, where it goes much further than that, is that Jacob actually dresses up like Esau, and he goes to his father Isaac, who is basically blind at the time, and he dresses up like Esau and mimics him in order to deceive his father to give him his brother Esau's blessing, and ends up taking the total blessing. And so what we see in all of this is Jacob taking the birthright, taking the blessing. He's using deception in order to provide for himself, in order to make sure that he is blessed and that he is good and that he has what he needs and has what he wants and takes what is not his. And as you look at Esau, imagine being in Esau's shoes in all of this. You know, kind of sometimes we give Esau a bad rap, but people have been murdered for much less for taking what is not theirs. As you see that there's when we see even today siblings who do not talk over the birthrights and over the inheritances, is, you know, so we see the anger of Esau in this situation, and maybe we can understand and understand how we would feel in that situation, not justifying his anger. But what ends up happening is that Esau is so angry with Jacob that Jacob has to flee for fear of his own life. And again, there's not really a good guy, a bad guy here. Both are wrong. But what we see is that this resulted from Jacob trying to take what is not his. And as his name signifies, he's the supplanter or the deceiver or the cheater. And so Jacob ends up in exile from his family because he's unable to go there because he's fearful that Esau is going to kill him. And so he goes off for many years, and many years pass by. And when we pick up in the story, we see that both Jacob and Esau at this point end up having their own families. But as Jacob moves on in his life, he ends up continuing doing much of the same thing. He continues to deceive. He continues to take what is not his, as we see in his situations between him and his father-in-law, and kind of vice versa, how they treat one another, is that Jacob continues to scheme and to plan in order to get ahead in life. And there's a lot we can say there. But it all kind of comes to a point, to this conflict, as many years after the original deceiving of Esau and taking the birthright and taking the blessing, Jacob now has to flee his father-in-law because of how things have escalated in both Jacob and his father-in-law's behavior. Now Jacob is taking his wives, his children, and has to flee. And he tries to come back to his family. And as Esau hears about Jacob wanting to return, Esau kindly plans to meet him and sends a messenger and says, "I'm coming to meet you." And Esau's coming with 400 of his men. Now that doesn't look too good, does it? Right? You say, okay, I'm going to encounter my brother, you know, he and what army? Well, Esau literally had an army there to meet Jacob. And so Jacob knows Esau has a motive. He has a reason to be angry with Jacob. And Jacob originally had to flee because Esau was going to take his life. And this looked like it was going to be the same outcome, that Esau was coming to take his life and to take all of Jacob's wealth and to take his family. And so Jacob's waiting. This is the night before Jacob is about to meet Esau, to encounter Esau. And so Jacob is waiting. And we're not actually going to look at a whole lot about the story of Jacob and Esau from this point. But what we want to do is to look at this night before Jacob's going to have this big encounter with Esau, as sort of this weird story kind of happens. So Jacob is there. He's in this place, this field, waiting to meet Esau. He's got all of his family, all of his wealth, all of his possessions there with him, all of the people working for him. He has people as well. And they're all there. And Jacob, we're told in the text, in Genesis chapter 32 and verse 24, it says, "So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak." So we have this odd scene of Jacob. He's kind of separated now from the rest of his camp. And in the middle of the night, he's wrestling with this man until daybreak. And we're not told anything about this man. We're not told about who they are, but they're wrestling through the night. And then we're told in verse 25, "When the man saw that he could not overpower Jacob, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man." In other words, he knocked his hip out of socket. And we look at what is going on here. First, the fact that Jacob refuses to give up in this wrestling, in this struggle. So much so that the man just touches his hip socket and he knocks it out of place. He dislocates his hip. And that kind of gives us the first indication that this man is no mere man. For who can touch a hip socket and knock it out of socket? Who can dislocate a hip simply by touching it? And it tells us something, that this man's identity is one of mystery. And so as we go on, it says, "The man said, 'Let me go, for it is daybreak.'" And we can probably assume the man does not want his identity to be revealed. And so he says, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." And then Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Is that Jacob wants to be blessed. "Give me your blessing." And as the struggle continues, the man then asked him, so he doesn't quite give him the blessing yet, but the man asked him, he says, "Well, what is your name?" And he says, "Jacob." So at this point in the story, it's already clear that this is some sort of spiritual being. This is not a mere man. But as the man then, instead of blessing him, he asks him his name. And what many scholars think is going on here is that the man is taking the confession of Jacob. And so he says, "What is your name?" And Jacob says, "Jacob." And remember, what does his name mean? It means supplanter, deceiver. And this whole situation that Jacob is wrapped up in on this night, as he's waiting for his imminent death from his brother Esau coming, and he's fleeing from his father-in-law, all of this is a result of Jacob's name and who he was, is that he was the deceiver, he was the supplanter. And many scholars think that this man is taking Jacob's confession, is that Jacob at this moment is coming face to face with the reality that he has spent his whole life trying to grasp things on his own, trying to take what is not his, trying to deceive and to scheme and to work so that he is right and that his life is good, despite what that means for all the other people around him. And so this man is taking that confession, and Jacob says, "My name is Jacob. I'm the deceiver. I'm the supplanter, the one who takes what is not his." And then that's when the man blesses him. He says, and then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, deceiver, supplanter, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans, and you have overcome." Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel. And so his name is changed. And as one writer says, is that is that his opponent changes Jacob's name, thus announcing Jacob new character and destiny. As he takes this confession, then gives them another name. In other words, as you come face to face with this reality, Jacob, that all you've done is to take what is not yours. You've struggled with others. Your life has been filled with fighting and with struggle. He says, "I'm giving you a new name, and in that, I'm giving you a new character and a new destiny. That from this point forward, Jacob, you no longer are Jacob the supplanter, but instead you're Israel." And he gives him this new name. And this name signifies one who has, or it means, really it means God fights, or to struggle with God, you could say, if you're kind of being loose with it. And he says the reason why he's giving him this name is because you have struggled with God and with humans, and you've prevailed. You've survived. You've made it. And really, when you look at Israel's history, Jacob, of course, ends up being the patriarch that Israel is named after, as Israel is his name. And you look at Israel's history, it's one of struggle. It's one of struggling in the wilderness, as was prayed just a few minutes ago. It's one of going back and forth with God and with man. And so this kind of personifies where they're going. But it also marks this unique relationship with God, right? That we have the ability to struggle with God. That God is not one who sits back and rules, but he actually joins us in our struggles. That's there as well. But this also gives us an indication of, again, of a possible identity of the man. For Jacob receives this name Israel because he struggled with God. What do you mean he has struggled with God? What does it mean to struggle with God? But it seems like that this story, and whoever this man is supposed to show that struggle between Jacob and between God. So let's continue on. We'll come back to that. And so as he's being blessed by this man again, Jacob continues to urge him. He says, "Please tell me your name. Reveal your identity." And the man replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And then the man blesses Jacob. And then apparently the man goes on from there and leaves Jacob alone. And then we're told in verse 30, it says, "So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, 'It is because I saw God face to face and my life was spared.'" I saw God face to face. So the text doesn't exactly clearly state to us who this man is. Later on in the Old Testament, it would say it was an angel. And that's been an interpretation by many people. But the word angel, it doesn't really help anything, because the word angel just means messenger. And so what many scholars have concluded is that this is a theophany, which means it's an appearance of God, and that Jacob wrestled with God. But whether or not Jacob was wrestling with the actual personification of God, which I kind of lean towards, or whether he's wrestling with an angel who represented God's presence, the point here is that this whole story is to illustrate Jacob's wrestling with God throughout his life. And Jacob trying to take what is not his. Jacob trying to go a different way than what God has called him to. Jacob trying to take goodness and blessedness for himself rather than allowing God to provide that for him. Jacob trusting in himself, being self-reliant rather than trusting and relying on God. That's what Jacob's whole life has been wrapped around. And centered around is Jacob seeking his own, to take what is not his and to seek his own good. But in this moment, he comes face to face with God, realizing he's out of options, right? That his ways are not working. He's literally on the brink of death. He says, and through this struggle, he says, "My life was spared." Because this isn't just a story about Jacob prevailing against God as if that was possible. But this is a story of Jacob encountering God in some mysterious way that we're not going to be able to delineate this morning. But Jacob encountering God and being totally wrapped up in his grace. Because obviously, Jacob cannot prevail against God. In fact, in other places in the Old Testament, and I think original readers probably would have picked up on this, as Jacob says, "I've seen God face to face and I prevailed," or "I survived." Well, when you look at other places in the Old Testament, it says if you were to see the face of God, you'd die. And so when Jacob says, "My life was spared," it's an indication of God's grace being poured out on him in this moment. And as Jacob moves on from this, we see his life is different. It says the sun rose above him, and as he passed Peniel, he was limping because of his hip. And then when he goes on from the story, he's a different person. He's got a new name. He's now limping. And he's able to face Esau. And if you continue on in the story in chapter 33, you see that he does face Esau. And that's a different story for another time, one that we won't look at in this series. But I can tell you this, is that that story ends up totally different. And that's because Jacob has encountered God, he's encountered himself, and he's pressing forward now, having encountered God's grace, and now trusting himself to God. But that limp, I want to focus on that limp for a moment. Because what that limp shows is that Jacob is a person who has encountered God and he survived, and that now he's always going forward, realizing that he cannot provide for himself ultimately. The limp is a sign that Jacob no longer will seek his own way. Jacob will no longer grasp for what is not his, but instead he will entrust himself to God. And that's what we see in the rest of Jacob's life. But as we walk away from this story, we see the importance and we see what Jacob does as he comes face to face with himself and with God. And any of us, as we think about our relationship with God, we think about following Jesus, we think about what it means to be human, we all have to have this moment where we come face to face with first ourself and to realize that our way isn't going to work, that our plans to bring goodness and blessedness to our own life and the life of others is ultimately, they're short-sighted. And if they're not in line with God's purposes, they're not going to bring about what we think they're going to bring about. And if that's not been made apparent in this series, then nothing else is. As when we choose to go and live into our own purposes, we try to bless ourselves and to take things in our own hands, right? Things always fall apart and we make a mess. But we got to come face to face with ourselves, realize our own wickedness, our own sinfulness, our own inability to provide for ourselves, and accept that and confess that, as we see Jacob does in this story. But we also come to face with God. And that can be a scary thing, to come face to face with the reality of God, to come into His presence, to be exposed by God's goodness, and to admit our wrong. But what we see in this story is that despite our struggles, God continues to bless. And that's been a common theme throughout the book of Genesis. Is despite the fact that we're imperfect, despite the fact that we make a mess of things, God continues to bless us. God continues to join us in our struggle and to be there with us and to carry us through. And that's what we can know, is that we were created for partnership with God, and God doesn't just give up on us when we fail to live up to that partnership. But instead, God comes down with us and He struggles with us. He joins us in the struggle. And ultimately, we see that totally lived out in the life of Jesus. As He joins us in the flesh, becomes a human being, joins us in the struggle, and goes to the cross on our behalf. And He is showing us in that our God is a God who struggles with us, who joins us in our struggles, is that He meant it. When He wanted to partner with the world, He meant it. And He ultimately shows that as Jesus goes to the cross on our behalf. But as we encounter God, as we face ourselves, we face God, and we walk away ready to rejoin our partnership with God, ready to rejoin into God's purposes for our life, we need to realize this, is that it's always going to be with a limp. Is any time we appear blessed by the world, we appear to be like we're doing well, we're doing good, we always need to be transparent about our own limp. Is that we do not get to a place of blessedness. We do not get to a place where life is good without encountering God and without encountering our own sin and without facing and confessing our own failures and our own sinfulness. And so we walk in faith, yet with that faith, it's always with the limp. Realizing that behind us, when we go our own way, it's filled with brokenness and with failure. And without God, we can't take one step without Him. And as a preacher, I take that personally, is that I don't preach as one who has made it. I don't preach as one who has arrived and that people just need to come and hear what I have to say because I have so much good to offer. That's not the reason I preach, because I don't. I preach as one preaching with a limp, as one who has encountered the radical grace of God in the midst of my own radical sinfulness and failures. But it's by the very power of the Holy Spirit and what God has given me through that gift that I'm able to stand here today before you and proclaim the Word of God. Not of my own goodness, not of my own success, because that's not there. And when I take one step of the Lord, one step without the Lord, I find myself facing the very same pits that He drug me out of. And so what we all must face is the fact that whatever success, whatever goodness, whatever blessedness is evidence in our life, that that's a result of the Lord. And that we walk with confidence, yes, because we know our value as people created in the image of God, people who are blessed and loved by God. Yet we do so with a limp because we realize by our own means, we cannot take one step alone. And maybe as you take this lesson in your minds and try to wrap your minds around it, maybe for you, you're someone who's kind of been away from church for a while. And maybe you think, okay, you know, church is for people who have it all together. Or church is full of people who are hypocrites, who try to be perfect, but they're not. Right? And I just don't want to be involved in that. Or maybe you think, you know, church is, I just don't think I could be perfect enough. Or I don't think I could be, I have it in me. I would struggle to be faithful. Here's what I want to tell you. Here's the good news. Is that Jesus built the church for this purpose, is that the church is for struggling people. That's been true from the point of Genesis, and we see that all through Revelation, is that the church is meant for struggling people and people who wrestle with the great truth of God. Maybe there's things in your mind that you can't quite wrap your mind around. Well, join the club. Maybe there's times where you don't feel like you can live up to God's standards. You're in good company. Is that we are all people who have encountered the grace of God. And that's the only reason we are here. Because without God's grace, we're just struggling people. People who can't make it on our own. But we're people who have learned to trust in the Lord. And to those of us who have been around church, and those of us who have been regular followers of Jesus, will say this, is that we always need to be transparent about our brokenness. We need to be transparent of the fact that the only reason we can walk in confidence and walk in the grace of God is because of His grace. And so we need to be transparent about our limp as we walk with a limp. But because of the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, because of His grace, because of His goodness, because God continues to be open-handed towards us, we all have the opportunity to rejoin our partnership with Him, to walk in His grace, and to do so with a limp. We all have that opportunity. And this morning, you have that opportunity. You have that opportunity to, like Jacob, confess and say, listen, I'm done trying to do things my own way. I'm done trying to take things into my own hands and to turn it over to the Lord. And you can respond. And it shouldn't be a scary thing, because God gives us grace and He continues to pour out His grace. And if you're here this morning, I want to tell you, there's a couple ways you can respond. You can respond immediately as we stand and sing here in just a moment. You can come up, we'd love to pray with you and talk with you about whatever the struggle is you're going through, whatever the challenges you're facing. Or we have our prayer room. And there'll be an elder back there this morning, a shepherd, a person who, like me, is only able to do what they do because of God's radical grace. And they'll be sitting in there ready to talk to you if you go out on, go back into the Kidman room, or Kidman hallway, and you go down the hallway. The first room on the left is our prayer room. You can go in there and pray with one of our shepherds this morning. Whatever it is, we would love to help you as you encounter God this morning, as you come face to face with our own brokenness and admit our need for help from the Lord. If you will, come as we stand and while we sing.